I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
This episode of the Cult Popture podcast was brought to you by our Patreon. If you want to tell us which films we should watch, get up to 2 extra exclusive podcasts a month, give us something to talk about in the post-credit scenes at the end of each episode, or even contribute to the discussion in the episode itself, then please consider joining the cult and donating at www.patreon.com/cultpopture. Ding dong, ding dong, the bells have tolled. For whom the bell tolls? Us.
What did the bell told us?
What did the... It told us that it is once again, the holidays have rolled around prematurely once again, because it is late November and we had to start this in early November, which felt very weird. But yeah, it's the Cult Popture podcast, and it's Netflixmas 2021, our yearly tradition where we watch all the often...
Well, no, it's, first of all, it's your yearly tradition where you dust off Jeremy and you put oil into his creaking joints, and he comes out to be a miserly Christmas curmudgeon again.
Okay, a few things there, Jeremy. You're often the most joyous one on these podcasts. And two, we got you for the mid-year self-indulgent quiz. And three, you've been busy this year. I don't want to spoil it early, but you did have another child.
Well, I didn't have another child. Also, everyone knows this because during said self-indulgent quiz, he was on me.
He was
like, he was
character.
Sleeping on me.
Yeah, he actually, I think he did better than you in points. No, he won. He won because I remember that being like locking that away because it'd be a great future quiz question. Who won the second self-indulgent quiz? Because it was Ezra.
Anyway.
With, I believe, like just under 100 points.
Yeah, so welcome along, everybody. My name is AJ, and if you hadn't picked up everyone's else's names, that's Richard and Jeremy here on the Cult Popture podcast to return to Netflixmas. This is part one. We split it. There were too many last year, and we split it up, and this year we're splitting it up again. And I'll tell you one thing right off the bat, we're not covering all of them.
Yeah.
In previous years, we've accidentally missed some. This time, we're
deliberately like, missing some.
They come out too late.
This is the fault of the fucking Netflix. Like, who releases a Netflixmas movie on the 24th of December? That gives you 24 hours to watch it.
It's almost like
48 if
it's almost like they don't think the primary purpose of releasing these films is to have podcasters talk about them in advance of Christmas.
Okay, you jest.
Maybe not, but still, who is going to watch a Christmas movie on Christmas Eve?
Also, like a brand new Christmas movie that they've never seen anything about before.
Yeah,
you've got one day to watch it where it's relevant, and then I feel like the drop-off with holiday-themed things is... I know it is for me, like, as soon as it's December 26th, I want to get rid of the Christmas tree. I just sort of begrudgingly put up with it.
Well, also, the movie's called 1,000 Miles from Christmas. It should be called bloody 24 Hours from Christmas.
We aren't talking about that one today, though.
So, yeah, you will see that... in 2 weeks, this is part one. We'll do part two in 2 weeks. And anything beyond that, tough shit. Sorry, Netflix, you should have released it earlier. But should we go over what all of the films are, and then we'll just say what we're covering for part one?
Okay.
So all up this year, you've got Love Hard, Father Christmas Is Back, Princess Switch 3, Romancing the Star, Robin, A Boy Called Christmas, A Castle for Christmas, Single All the Way, Shaun the Sheep, The Flight Before Christmas, David and the Elves, A California Christmas, City Lights, Grumpy Christmas, A Thousand Miles from Christmas, and A Nighy Christmas. We won't get to all of these. Today we're talking about the first four that have released, which is Love Hard, Father Christmas is Back, The Princess Switch 3, Romancing the Star, a franchise near and dear to all of our hearts, as you well know, and Robin.
Yep, and look, if this is your first Netflixmas with us, listeners, what we're talking about basically is that every year, well, it's
since
kind of become
2017, I think. Yeah,
yeah. Netflix has like dropped a bunch of Christmas movies that feel like they're specifically like a package that's dropped on Netflix. Like these are Netflix Christmas movies. However, they don't correlate them anywhere. They don't say these are the movies. So we have to find them every year, and we missed California Christmas 1 last year, and now we're gonna miss it this year too.
I hope that that California Christmas 3 is released like August. Next year, and it's like we have to cover
and basically the joke, everybody, the joke is that they're often really bad and really hard to watch,
except for bloody one of them, which annual reminder, if you're looking for a Christmas movie to watch, go watch the Netflix film Klaus. It's like we're going to talk about these films, and you're going to find that a lot of them are garbage, and we are going to praise some of them, and we're going to act like, oh man, this is pretty good. None of them can hold a candle to Klaus, which came out 2 years ago, which is not only by a country mile the best Netflix Christmas movie, it's one of the best Netflix movies they've ever done, and it's probably the best Christmas movie ever made. Go watch Klaus. It's fucking incredible.
It was all worth
that,
it for
that
Klaus.
Opinion is definitely Richard's. It's just very, very good, but best Christmas movie ever made? I don't know. All right.
I don't think there are any good Christmas movies. I hate the whole goddamn festive season.
Well, that's the thing, because it's easy to be like, yo, Klaus isn't the best Christmas movie of all time. But it's like, okay, what's its competition? Love Actually? Okay, yeah, try saying that in 3 years' time.
Miracle on 34th Street.
Miracle on 34th Street.
So good.
It's the Wonderful Holiday. Life. It's like you've actually only got three or four that it's genuinely competing with.
Home Alone.
I haven't seen that.
So, the way that we usually do this is we, out of the four that we've watched for each part, we go 3, 2, 1, and we each say what we thought was the worst one, and we slowly work our way up to the best one of this.
And this year's going to be no different.
Exactly. And I think last year it was a little bit more contentious. I feel like we're probably going to have the same answers for this year's first part.
Pretty cut-dried.
I'm not passionate about these. It's just it feels obvious that there is an order in which to rank these. So shall we get started, my best friends, my Christmas brothers? Let's jump in and get Netflixmas 2021 started. It's November. It's usually the festive season gradually starts, and you hear A Christmas Carol there, but you can't pinpoint when it started to feel like Christmas. But with having to watch Love Hard in early November, I was like, I guess it's Christmas. I guess we're starting.
And
so this is Christmas, and what have you done?
So this is Christmas in minor key.
All right. The worst of this batch of four, just for those playing at home, this batch of four contains Love Hard, released on the 5th of November, Father Christmas is Back, released on the 7th of November, Princess Switch 3, Romancing the Star on 18th of November, and Robin on the 24th of November. So, 3, 2, 1... Father Christmas is back.
It's one of the worst Netflixmas movies we've ever had to watch.
It is genuinely the worst, one of the worst movies I have seen in the last 10 years.
Legit. Absolutely. No arguments here.
So Father Christmas is Back, unanimously the worst one. So just a little brief overview. It's a British Christmas comedy film directed by Philippe Martinez and Mick Davis, and stars Elizabeth Hurley, Natalie Cox, John Cleese, and Kelsey Grammer as Father Christmas himself. Now, he's not playing bloody Santa Claus. The family's last name is Christmas.
Oh, no, sorry. You're reading that as if it's legitimate.
No, it is. Like, it's in the film.
It is not a legitimate thing for just a random family to have the last name Christmas.
I mean, Christmas is a last name. I don't know if you've seen Dumb and Dumber.
It's a first name too.
Or, yeah, The World Is Not Enough.
No, that was Christmas Wait, Jones.
The Expendables. Jason Statham's character is Lee Jimmy. Christmas.
You bigot.
There's precedent. There's precedent.
But anyway, so the whole thing of their last name being Christmas, I'm terribly ashamed to say I did not notice until the end credits when he's credited.
Neither did I.
Yeah.
They're like,
it's like if I was writing this movie, every scene they would be like, well, I guess we're the Christmases. That's what we do.
They kept I am not going to ask either of you to go back and watch the movie, which I would normally
say, fuck you, I'm going to.
The number of times they say, and like, because the worst part about this is that blonde woman. We need to go back to the beginning because people who haven't seen this don't know anything about this movie. Should I do a quick pricey?
Yes.
Okay.
Oh, please. I've been waiting for you to offer.
Jeremy, where's your pricey? Come on.
So just to preface this, I can't do quick pricies, but this year I'm challenging myself to do a quick summary of the movie.
Like in January, you were like, I'm going to do some quick pricey. This is the skill I'm going to improve this year.
Wait, what the fuck is a pricey?
It's a short summary.
A pricey. Okay. It comes from like a map drawing, doesn't it?
Well, it's Latin.
Yeah, it's quite commonly used in like maps. That if you were to draw a map that was essentially just like this part's the lake, this part's the land, and there's a mountain here, that would be like a pricey map.
I love that our explanation of the word pricey is the exact opposite of a pricey.
I love that Richard was like, isn't it common in maps? And Jeremy said, no, it's Latin, as if those two things can't be the same. As map is a separate language to Latin.
All right. Anyway, so... welcome to Netflix.
We said
everyone.
Last year we weren't going to do this anymore, and here we are without question. We were like, "Yep, all right, we're doing it again for this year."
It's funny, you know, you like you Google things, and it gives you like questions.
Yeah,
it's funny. If you search pricey, the question that comes up is, "What is pricey in simple words?" And it's like the answer should just be, "Funny you should phrase it like that."
Yeah, AJ, you know that Netflix was definitely going to happen because this is literally the first time I've been out of the house after 7:30 p.m. for months.
He's getting sillies.
And that's not just because there's been a global pandemic and a lockdown. Because
he's on coke.
So, Father Christmas is back. To be honest, there is no plot to this film. However, I'm going to try and do a quick overview, a pricey, if you will.
A pricey. Oh,
what does that mean?
Right.
already taken about 3 minutes, I think, and we haven't even said anything about the movie. So, basically, the movie starts
the last
out
name's
with
Christmas. We've established that.
Blonde Christmas woman who is married to a. They're all English, except for a few of them, but the family is English. She is one of four sisters, the Christmas sisters. She is married to a guy called Hope, so that means her last name is Mrs. Christmas Hope, which is
that's clever.
Constantly referred to. She is constantly referred to as Mrs. Christmas Hope, and neither of you picked it up.
I thought it was just a pet name.
There's also a part where they're in a bar and they're like presenting the Christmas sisters and they come up and do a song. I just thought that was the name of their stage. That was
and
their
the fact
name.
That Kelsey Grammer plays their father and he comes back in the movie.
Yeah.
The fact the movie is called Father Christmas is Back.
Yeah,
I get it.
Which when
I
it,
get it now.
When it fell together at the end of the film, when I realized that, when the credits came up, that's why I gave it 1 star instead of half.
I promised I would be quick on these, but this is shit. So
there's Do you know what? Not only does the title give it 1 star, I'll concede that it's vaguely clever, but it's not even the best title. I think they should have called this Absent Father Christmas. Right, because he's an absent father. Father Christmas is back is an awfully like clunky wording.
Well, yeah, because it made me feel like I'd missed Father Christmas.
Yeah. Like, this should be a sequel.
That'd be like 2016's fucking Netflix.
You want people to be thinking about the concept of an absent father, and then as they're thinking about that, you slap them with Christmas. Oh my God!
Okay.
He's not literally Father Christmas. He's not
so
Santa. He's
on just this podcast, we like to talk about movie titles.
Movie names?
Yeah, shut up. We talk about movie names a lot on this podcast.
I'm out of practice.
Yeah, our famous segment, continue the group of movies.
Anyway, so there are four sisters. They all come home to blonde sister's house, which happens to be an enormous country mansion for some reason, and it's never really explained other than like, oh, this was my family's home, but like
she
married a guy,
you know.
Oh, and it's immediately unrelatable. Oh cool, I'm watching the struggles of a bunch of rich assholes.
I know, it's like they're all ridiculously wealthy. Anyway, sorry. So Liz Hurley is one of the sisters, and she's like Liz Hurley, which is the only redeeming feature of this entire movie, is that Liz Hurley is just a full Liz Hurley the entire time, which is just great.
Are you a lesbian?
I wouldn't claim that. Blonde Christmas sister is her only stage direction seems to be you're constantly stressed out about everything, no matter what. And then there's the other sister who is her only stage direction is you like the Beatles. Everything you do is about the Beatles. Every word you say is going to be about the Beatles. And then there's a fourth sister, which is like, I travel a lot and I also have sex with a lot of people. That's my character direction. And so they all come together for this Christmas at the house for some unknown reason, because none of them like each other. And I'm like, why are you spending Christmas together if none of you like each other?
That's just Christmas, baby.
And their mother's there as well, with John Cleese, who seems to be the gardener of this like mansion for some reason. And then,
well, the gun's not going to maintain itself.
They just have a bunch of tension. They just do things for whatever reason. There's a lot about a Rolls Royce from Liz Hurley's boyfriend. And then they just have conversations which go nowhere. Then Kelsey Grammer just shows up out of nowhere with his girlfriend,
because he's back
with his girlfriend who is like the same age as his daughters, or his younger daughters.
Okay. It is a plot point in the film, though.
But it happens like literally like 25 minutes in. Anyway, yeah. So then they have a Christmas market for some reason, which they're deeply involved in setting up and planning for some reason. And then they get drunk and sing a song at a bar and they're all like happy together.
And the movie ends, because that was the natural place to end.
And the movie ends. That's the natural place where it finishes. But then there's still half an hour to go. They all come
back.
So
long.
Well, the power has to go out.
The third act in this movie is heavy.
They all come back from the bar, and Kelsey Grammer's new wife has done the American thing, because she comes from America, and she's set lights up around the entire mansion, which, can I just say, the mansion was already decorated for Christmas and already had lights, but she's done like crazy ones.
She
connects the power and it all goes out, and I just literally can't remember what happens from there. Oh, Liz Hurley gets pregnant. That's right.
No, there's this whole plot line where the main character's husband thinks that she's pregnant, but it's already established that they haven't had sex in a year and a half. So he naturally assumes, oh, well, this is definitely my wife's pregnancy test and she's cheating on me.
He finds it in the rubbish bin of their ensuite bathroom.
Mm. Yeah, to be fair, that is actually an airtight plot point, AJ.
No, I just think you'd ask something, or you know, like he immediately jumps to the worst case scenario. It turns out John Cleese is one of the daughter's real dad.
Actually it does end so that you find out that, because everyone's like, oh, you're such an asshole, Kelsey Grammer, I wish Father Christmas had never come back.
Oh, because also, by the way, this is the first time he's ever been back for Christmas since they were all
and
like,
and you find
teenagers.
Out that it was actually that their mum had cheated on him with John Cleese, the groundkeeper playing himself, and they and so that was why he left, kind of thing. It was actually, no, your mum's a slag, and so that's why she's the bad parent, not your dad.
But I'm such a good guy that I just stayed away forever, even after we all became adults, and you totally could have handled that information.
And like I will concede that revealing that he was cheated on makes him a little bit more of a sympathetic character, but they try to make you sympathize him way before that. And I was just like, absolutely not. Like, this guy is a horrible person.
He's absentee Father Christmas.
And you're trying to make me think that like maybe there's some more to him. I don't know. I hated this, man. I reckon out of all the Netflix movies we've watched, this might be either the worst or second worst.
This is the anti-Klaus from Richard's. It's not only one of the worst Netflix Miss Christmas movies. It's not only the worst Netflix movie. It's also the worst Christmas movie I've ever seen.
And I think it's hard to even rationalize how this was made. Why did this end up on Netflix? What
Who is this for?
But also, how this attracted John Cleese, Kelsey Grammer,
oh, yeah,
and
John
Liz Hurley.
Cleese is the bastion of good taste.
But like these, and Catherine Quinton as well. Catherine Quinton is a like English actress. She plays the mum. She's actually she's like good. Like she's been in good things, right?
She's in Jonathan Creek.
This really smacks to me of they went like, oh, we've managed to get these stars together for a Christmas movie. They've all signed on. We've got a location, which is this beautiful mansion house. We've got to film it in a month. Let's start planning.
Oh my God, Christmas is right around the corner.
let's start planning the script in like 20 days.
Yeah, or it's either that or the way I felt when I was watching, I was like, it's like this is the television Christmas special for a TV show I haven't watched. Like this show,
Father Christmas.
That is, and all of them except for Kelsey Grammer had been regulars on the TV show, and Kelsey Grammer was like the special guest star that they brought in. Yeah, that's such a good
call. Absolutely. Yeah, and it feels because there's so many things where it's like my investment. They haven't even tried to get me to invest in these characters, and it made me think that maybe if I'd watched 12 episodes of these characters already, maybe then there would be some kind of reason, but it doesn't meet you halfway, and it just feels like you're missing some kind of crucial context to understand.
AJ, can I just ask you a question as someone who's deeply involved in script writing, and like a lot of your kind of creative energy has been spent on trying to like become a person who understands the language and the strategy of script writing. Who's the protagonist of this film?
I would say naturally I would say it's the blonde mother.
Supposed to be her. She is genuinely unlikable in every way. And yet she's the first character that we see on screen. She's the one who's like the sort of the person who runs this household. We're meant to empathize with her stressing out over her sisters all coming to visit for Christmas. But she, like, we have no, like, there's no inner life. We don't understand her emotions. And she has one character beat, which is, I'm stressed out about everything.
This feels like it's from, like, 2006. Like, the only thing that tells me it's not is the age of the actors in it. But, like, it feels so, like, just the plot points and the ideas feels like it's a script that's been hanging around for over a decade. And then people are like, we finally got it made. And it's like this bullshit.
Yeah, totally.
Piece of crap.
And speaking of the age of the actors, can we just point out that John Cleese is in his 80s? And I've looked up the age of the actress who's supposed to play his daughter. He would have been in his mid 50s when he fathered her.
Good on him.
Like,
that's possible, though. You can actually still father someone in your mid-50s. Great news, Jeremy. Keep popping one out every Netflix miss for the next 25 years.
Many my children.
Yeah. I can't wait for you to reveal that you're having another child in the stupidest way possible.
Wait, have we talked about that?
I don't know. How did you reveal the first child?
I don't know the first child, but the second one.
I remember I made a joke about you not being able to get a boner, and you're like, "Well, I can because I used it to impregnate my wife."
And then AJ was like, "Wait, is this you telling us that you're having another kid?"
And there was something dumb with your first child as well. I remember saying,
"Don't say it, man."
It's like there's something dumb with your first child as well. I think it was her name.
I can't remember. I think it was. Or maybe you just made like a Borat voice joke about man bon child. And we're like, wait, are you serious?
Oh, I'm sure that the Discord will tell us what it was. The other thing that I just want to say before we stop talking about this godforsaken movie, because it is genuinely just, it was repulsive to try and watch. Like my eyes just kept wanting to like move away from the screen.
It's aggressive, like to the audacity to not finish when the Christmas sisters are performing at the bar and to have another full act. It's like, leave me alone.
Yeah, so the thing that, like, I wrote this in a message because I watched this, I think, 2 days before you guys both watched this. And so I was messaging the group thread, like, my immediate reactions to things happening
with
on the
no
screen
context.
With no context. And it was just like, I need people to talk to about this while I'm doing it. And you're all just like, bro, no idea
bro,
what the
no
hell you're saying.
Right.
But the thing that I said that I feel most passionately about is that watching this film felt like watching three different improv troupes all on the same stage, that all three of them have three different like word office, prompts yeah. of what they're supposed to be right. acting out, but they're all interacting, but they don't know what each other is doing. And so it's such a mess. And there is not a single likable character in the entire movie.
One of them got the Beatles as their prompt, though. And yeah. and they were the best at it.
They nailed it.
I will just say before we move on, the tagline for this film is, and you think your family's a mess? All right. Next worst one. All right.
Yeah.
3, 2, 1.
The Princess Switch 3, Romancing the Star.
All right, so Princess Switch 3, Romancing the Star. This is, we're returning to the world of the Princess Switch.
Montanaro,
yeah. Starring Vanessa Hudgens, and Vanessa Hudgens. That's right, three Vanessa Hudgenses. Presumably all... you know, think it's inevitable that people are going to die from the pandemic and that we should just let them die.
I thought about that while watching it, how like crazy it was that she just said that.
Yeah.
Like the sweet, innocent, wide-eyed actress who we, you know, came to know in High School Musical. There's a video clip of her being like, well, people just die.
This is how we know that like the criminal version of Vanessa Hudgens in this movie, which is the main character of this movie,
yeah.
is the closest one to her real personality.
Yeah.
I will just say, so on Father Christmas's back, does not have a Rotten Tomatoes score, but it does have 10% audience score.
That's an abysmal audience score.
Thanks for bringing us back. Thanks for bringing us back to that movie. I really wanted to return.
Just to lead into the fact that Princess Switch 3 has 30% critic score.
That makes sense.
All right. So, yeah, this is... unfortunately, we don't get an extra Vanessa Hudgens in this one.
Which is bullshit. Why would you make this movie?
There's two in the first one, three in the second one. And then this one, it doesn't... the tagline for this film was Merry Switchmas as well.
So I thought there was going to be a fourth one, and I actually messaged the two of you while I was watching this going like, I'm predicting it now, there's going to be a fourth Vanessa Hudgens, because when she talked about her mother and her mother leaving her, and they showed like her mother's hands, they had flashbacks to her as a little girl, like being left at her boarding school as a child by her mother who like flew away for Christmas. And then it was clear to me that obviously they're going to at some stage in the movie bring her mother back and there's going to have to be a reunion. Fully expected this to be Vanessa Hudgens aged up playing her own mother.
That would have been fucking hilarious.
Like, why would you not do that?
Yeah, that's a good idea.
AJ, do you want to give us a précis of what this one's about?
I can try. There's this, so I'm going to assume people know what the other two are about before launching into this.
The first one's a Prince and the Pauper thing, and then the second one is like there's a third one who's evil and wants to take the throne.
Yeah. And so in this one, there is this Star of Peace thing. It's like a gift given to them by another fictional nation.
The Vatican? Not a fictional nation.
I refuse to recognize the Vatican as a state. Anyway, they give them this thing, and
Jeremy,
it's like
that's
you
the
take.
That's like the like the funniest anyone has ever found anything.
Like, they've been given this by another fictional nation. I'm like, you mean the Vatican?
I think I'm on AJ's side that it's pretty. A, I also don't recognize the Vatican. B, I don't think it's that unfair to assume that if this movie that you fucking barely remember, that they would have made up a nation. And just and like what, it's like 50-50 to say they made up a nation, I'm sure.
It's funny because you, like, when you were doing the pricey for Father Christmas's Back, Jeremy, I had to fight the masculine urge to make fun of every single word you chose. Just because that's how these that's the energy of these podcasts.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so I accept you picking on anything I say. Go for it. It's part of the game. I don't want to be able to get through five words without someone pulling apart a specific word choice.
Why would you fight that urge? It's the entire basis of our entire, like, this whole podcast.
All right, so there's a Star of Peace. It's this. What is it? It's like a sculpture.
It's a star. It's presumably once belonged to Saint Nicholas himself.
Yeah,
right.
Big gold thing with lots of jewels on it.
Yeah.
It's given to the kingdom, and then someone steals it, and they're like, oh no, someone stole it. Who did it? And then they work out, like, this villain has it in his vault, and so they need to steal it back. And they're like, well, the only person we know who's capable of such a devious act is evil Vanessa Hudgens,
Fiona.
And so they break her out of, it's not like, she's not exactly in prison, she's working at a convent. Right.
She's doing community service at a convent.
That's right.
Yeah. Yeah. And so they get her to essentially devise, dare I say, a heist to steal back the thing.
Well,
which
crucially,
is like
she has to get in touch with her underworld contacts to find out who has the star first, and then devise the plan with said hot lover boy.
Yeah, I don't know. It feels so Mormon to make your heist movie where you're still the good guys. Like, surely part of the allure of doing a heist movie is that you're the criminals, right?
Yeah. I will say, did you understand the title for this film, AJ?
Romancing the Star.
Yeah.
Because of Romancing the Stone?
Yeah, I didn't get that until like a few days later. When a friend of the podcast, Carl, I said, I was supposed to do something with him. I said, I'm just finishing. Maybe I just finished the film. But I said something about Princess Switch 3, Romancing the Star. I said, oh, it's the worst thing I've seen since Princess Switch 3, Romancing the Star. And he said, I hope the star was sufficiently romanced. And then it clicked and I was like, ah. Because the whole time I was like, which one's supposed to be the star? But then realizing, oh, they're actually the MacGuffin of the film is a star. Because I had read the title months earlier and just assumed like, oh yeah, there's going to be a celebrity Vanessa Hudgens.
I
never got
too,
the idea out of my head that star referred to celebrity. And then, I realized, oh, it's like, because there's the line in Romancing the Stone. It's like, yeah, well, at least I'm trying to grab the stone instead of romancing it out from under her. And it's like, yeah, that's what they're trying to do. And so it's a weird title. It's a weird thing to reference. And not the only weird title, which is a reference to another movie we're going to be covering, or two movies, in fact.
So the way the movie ends up being framed is they make Fiona the lead character. She gets most of the screen time, and this is Vanessa Hudgens doing this voice, darling, and which is clearly the character she has the most fun playing, probably the best of the three, and the reason why I think the Princess Switch 2 is the best one. But it's the Jack Sparrow effect, where like maybe this character doesn't work as the lead, thing. Not that these movies need to be judged on any metric similar to actual good movies, because I think it's the worst of the Princess Switch movies, but that's not to say the others are at all good movies.
Well, yeah, because when we like logged this and people on our Discord saw that we gave it such a lot, they were surprised. They were like, what? And it's like, no, what are you talking about? These movies are garbage. Like every year we convince ourselves that we like these movies. And in a week's time, they'll announce a Princess Switch 4. And the three of us in our private group chat will be like, fuck yes, fourth Vanessa Hudgens, and be like super excited about it. I listened back, I've been listening back in anticipation for our most disappointing films of 2021 and to our most anticipated from the start of the year. And the way we talk about there being a third Printer Switch film, where all of us are excited. And it's like, you listened to our Netflix list from last year and we hated it.
I think that I bring the part of the puzzle, the Netflix must puzzle that I bring to the trio as the person that refuses to admit that these movies are good. I feel like you guys, it's a formula that works. You guys give yourself over more to it. I feel like my insanity is my role in this story. Here's what I think of this movie.
Mr. Protagonist.
I'm not the protagonist. The protagonist would be the person that
you're the Fiona of the group. You get to have the most fun, but you don't really work as the lead.
No. You shouldn't be a protagonist. You're supposed to be an antagonist and never take the spotlight.
Right. Okay. So I think that if you are making a third Princess Switch movie and you've established in the second one that you add another Vanessa Hudgens to the cast, I think it is unforgivable to even consider irresponsible to even consider making another one where you don't add at least one more Vanessa Hudgens.
There should be three more added in this film.
Yeah, it's
there
like making be. Another indie movie and not including Nazis.
And I think that it's so it's boring, and you're setting yourself immediately for all those people. God, we might be. I was about to say for all the people like holding out for this one to see a new Vanessa Hudgens added, but I just realized we're probably the only people in the universe that watch these movies under this context. Like making fun of it, and these are probably more watched by their target demographic, who probably don't have too much wrong with them.
Kate, who will be listening to this, that I work with.
Kate loves these movies. Hi, Kate.
Should bring her on.
Replace AJ with Kate next year. Start a petition in the Discord.
We should. Like, it would be great. This great perspective to have someone.
Well, just like when we discuss Vanessa Hudgens movies, like AJ just has to take a step back and Kate comes forward. Like, she's like, "All right, everyone, I'm the voice of reason."
Yeah. So, I think as well is that like. I'm going to repeat a thought from last Netflixmas, which was like, it is a very funny idea to me to, of all the actresses that you give this franchise that's based around her playing different characters, you give it to someone whose acting ability is not especially notable, whose like characterization is not especially unique from movie to movie. But on top of that, I would say, She not only does a good job of playing three distinct characters, she does a good job of playing three distinct characters who end up playing each other, like pretending to be each other. And you can tell the difference between American Vanessa Hudgens and English Vanessa Hudgens pretending to be American Vanessa Hudgens. And in this one, they all at one point end up playing Fiona, the evil one. It's not quite, the sting isn't quite as potent. It's not as good as the second one. But I did think seeing prim and proper English Vanessa Hudgens having to pretend to be like dirty criminal Chef. Vanessa Hudgens, I thought that was quite sexy. And I think this is the sexiest Princess Switch of the three.
The tango scene. The tango scene.
The tango.
I was there for it, man.
Yeah. It's sexy stuff, and I just think the idea of watching someone whose entire characterization is that they're sensible, watching her have to be like a little bit sultry, I'm into it.
And realizing, and also like it was a bit risque, really. But it's just like the inference was he was like kept wanting her to come upstairs with him, clear inference that was like let's go upstairs and bang, she's just like oh quickly let's dance instead. The one thing I would say about this movie is that in kind of in train with what you guys are saying, the whole point of these movies is novelty, right? Like you've been saying about like you, why on earth wouldn't you keep adding another Vanessa Hudgens character? Is like we watch these movies, it's like a really, really schlocky soap opera. Like, you watch it because you just want to go, oh my gosh, I can't believe how ridiculous that is. That's so crazy. And nothing about this movie was crazy. They tried to turn the Princess Switch movies and the franchise both into kind of a heist, but also like a romantic comedy with the evil with Fiona and like her lover boy like guy, but also turned it into this like backstory of her recovering from childhood trauma of being left by a parent and like having to repair that and stuff. It was just like, what are you trying to accomplish with this film? It was like just crazy, and also crazy that. So in two Christmas films this year, the ones I watched back to back, you have
Father Christmas is back to back.
You have a parent who was a completely absent parent and is established to be a terrible parent, coming back and within like 5 minutes of the film, trying to be like, oh no, actually we should totally reunite and you should forgive me and like totally erase all the like hurt just because I'm saying sorry now.
Both played by Kelsey Grammer as well. Am I remembering correctly, was Rose McIver in the last one? Was there a little cameo?
Yes, in the wedding.
Yeah. Ah, yes, the Aldovian. That was fun.
What if so? Fiona is Margaret's cousin. Is that correct?
Yes.
What does it make you when you're the cousin to a princess?
Nothing.
Princess's cousin.
Nothing? Because it just seems very hard that someone in royalty could abandon their child. Like, it feels like they're spotlighted, and you know, like, how hard is it to be an absent mother when your sister is the queen?
Montanaro is a bit backwards with those kind of things. I think it's pretty well documented. I will say as well, in defense of these films, every film has had one shot where I've been like, that was cool.
Yeah.
Like, there's one shot, like one, you know, continuously moving shot where the two Vanessa Hudgens will interact or it'll transition in the middle of a scene. And it's like, you can work out how they did it, but it's like, that's cool.
But it's
you didn't have to do that. Like, you could have done that in a static shot, but you did something fun with it. And I can appreciate that from a technical standpoint.
I think this feels more like a spin-off to the main Princess Switch series than a third part. I think this should have just been called Romancing the Star and been explicitly set in the same universe and not have the other two in it and just be about Fiona. The fun character. Mm-hmm. You know,
because you have people that don't look like Vanessa Hudgens at all. Get Ashley Tisdale in and have her play another person who has to pretend to be Fiona.
Mm.
Yeah. I will just give a shout out though, as I now do in these podcasts, the production values. Can I just say, like,
there it is.
That Merry Christmas, this movie, the sets, the locations. I mean, it's all filmed in Edinburgh, and like they just have the houses, they have the grand buildings, they like the way that they're decorated for Christmas. Like, I watched this with my wife and
with who?
My wife.
Yeah.
and both of us just were like, oh, this movie was terrible, but just watching us kind of put us in a feel for Christmas because there was snow and everything.
Production
was like,
value very nice.
So like so lavishly decorated for Christmas, and I just like, I wanted to go visit that house that is the palace for Montanaro. It's so beautiful.
How many more chances are you going to give the series, though, Jeremy?
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
How long until the production values just isn't enough? When they reduce it so there's probably only going to be one Vanessa Hudgens in the next movie. will the production values be good enough then? That's my question.
Well, basically, I'm going to give it to when Vanessa Hudgens has her hair done by the same woman who does Rose McIver's hair in A Christmas Prince.
The part that really pissed me off in this movie is when they're doing the heist, and they leave without Fiona, and then the driver, who's like one of her manservants or something, sees her in the reflection of the rearview mirror, and he reverses and opens the door and says, "Come with me if you want to live." And I was like, "What? Why are they doing a Terminator?" Why are they doing a Terminator reference? And then later on, the upper class British husband of American Vanessa Hudgens is like, "I'm sort of like that pointy ear bat fellow, and you're like that feline lady." And I'm just like, why are they?
Who do they mean?
Shut. unprompted pop cultural references piss me off, I guess. Like,
I completely agree with you. It rings really hollow that, like, especially these people who are supposed to be kind of like royalty. Well, not kind of like royalty. They actually are royalty. Yeah. And it's just like making some daggy, like really crappy reference to Batman. And it's just like, no. Although,
do you think it's because the boyfriends across the country, across the world, that are going to be forced to watch this with their 20-something girlfriends, as in the girlfriend's age is 20-something? They're not. No. They don't have. Maybe they do. I'm not judging. But anyway, do you think it's like the in the same way that like adult jokes are in Shrek and it's for the parents? Do you think this is something for the movie buff boyfriends who are being made
to be like they mean Batman?
They mean Terminator. Terminator. I fucking love Terminator.
Oh babe, you never get it. Oh, this movie gets me, man.
But because it's so obtuse, it's more of a how do you do fellow kids vibe to it. How do you do fellow movie buffs? Maybe it's in there for us. Maybe they know we review these movies on the podcast.
Well, all right, that brings us to the end of Princess Switch 3 Romancing the Star. We've only got two films left. Well, what, a film and a short film, actually, really. And so, next worst one on the count of three. Well, counting down to one.
Oh, my God. I nearly said it.
Three, two, one.
Robin.
Love Hard.
I'm kind of on the fence. I'm sorry. Let's do Robin.
I thought this would be obvious. Really? You guys reckon Robin's worse than Love Hard?
Yeah. I think I think Love Hard's a better one to finish on.
There's more to talk about.
Yeah. Robin's just like, this one was cute. This was nice. Like, I think as well, talking about it, like the whole thing of expectations, Robin is really nice. And I was expecting it to be really nice. Love Hard, I was like, this is going to be fucking garbage. And I was like, that wasn't the worst thing I've ever seen. Anyway. They kind of meet in the middle for me
There's a general quality to both of them, which means that they're 100%. Not bad to watch.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm. I don't feel like I'd like these ones. I don't feel like I wasted my time.
No.
But for the sake of finishing on an actual movie, we'll do Robin now. Robin is a 30-minute special by Aardman Animation, who you might know from doing Pirates, Band of Misfits. most famously did, obviously, Wallace and Gromit and Chicken Run.
Flushed Away.
First Man? Or what was the...
Oh, what is that called?
Early Man,
yeah. Yeah, Early Man. Wait, and Pirates, Band of Misfits.
Wasn't that Leica, Early Man?
No, you're thinking of Missing Link.
I am thinking of Missing
Link. That's like, I always do that to you, and that might be the first time when, like, legitimately that is what you're thinking of.
Wasn't that Prometheus and Bob?
All right, Robin.
Yeah, so this one, it's about... A robin egg that hatches in front of a group of mice, and she grows up believing that she's a mouse. She sets off on the heist to end all heists, according to IMDb, to prove to her family that she can be a really good mouse, but ends up discovering who she really is. It's all about she's trying to steal this the star.
She's a really shithouse mouse.
Yeah, because she wants to be sneaky, but robins aren't sneaky.
I don't know if she... She grows up believing she's a mouse, because there's no moment where she like looks at her reflection and is like, wait a minute, I'm not a mouse at all.
I have wings.
Like she just sort of knows that she's a robin, but behaves like a mouse.
Yeah, tries to be as much like a mouse as possible.
Yeah, it's about trying to fit in, I guess. That, but it's like, because whenever the mice have to do mice shit, it's primarily involves sneaking, which Robin isn't great at.
Yeah. And sneaking to steal, just to be clear, to steal food from inside humans' houses.
Yeah. And doesn't believe like that she can fly.
Diamonds.
Not quite the heist to end all heists, but
no.
But she ends up, teaming up with this magpie voiced quite beautifully by Richard E. Grant.
Best part of the whole movie.
Who sort of teaches her about how to be gives her the tools to teach herself about how to be a bird. And there's also a cat voiced by Gillian Anderson, who she has to get away from.
And there's music.
Yeah. The music's weird, eh?
Like, real weird, because Gillian Anderson cannot sing.
Well, it's this weird thing where it's like, yeah, it's not breaking. They're not like, it's not a musical in the sense that, like, I mean, it is, but it's not like done like a musical where it's like they break into song and dance. It's just a few lines into something. They're like, you're like, oh, they're singing. Like,
actually, no, it's not diegetic.
It's non-diegetic.
No.
No, it's not.
It is diegetic, but most musicals are diegetic. That's why you confused yourself.
Yeah. There's an interesting thing where the magpie is showing off his stuff and he sings a parody of See My Vest, which should be a parody of Be Our Guest from
Beauty and the Beast.
Beauty and the Beast, but it's more explicitly referencing
like the
See My Vest from The Simpsons.
Yeah, the rhythm of the lyrics and also the way that he is moving.
And what he's singing about.
And what he's singing about is so much more Mr. Burns and See My Vest than Lumiere from Be Our Guest. And
right. Because I just thought it was a parody of Be My Guest. I didn't really understand why you guys were saying it was See My Vest.
Well, it's just so bizarre because out of the blue, while I was watching it, messaged the group saying like, whoa, crazy, a See My Vest parody. And Richard was like, oh my gosh, totally.
I was like, this is See My Vest. Yeah, like, but the way he's bouncing around and he's showing off. I mean, it does then Be Our Guest as well. Maybe what I'm thinking of is just that I'm much more familiar with See My Vest.
I think you might be onto something, but I think what it is, it was the worst part of the movie and a complete disaster because I think they were trying to parody Be My Guest, which is already a weird decision to have a parody song in your movie where none of the other songs are parodies anyway. But the person who composed it and wrote it is obviously more familiar with See My Vest, and so it comes off more as that. Shouldn't be a parody of See My Vest. If you're going to do one of them, it should be the original. The idea of a parody, frankly, makes me sick.
Especially in an original film. But what's crazy, I think what's actually going on is that Be Our Guest is about welcoming the character in and putting on a show for them, whereas the magpie is going around and showing
all
of his stuff that he's collected, which is exactly what's happening with Mr. Burns and See My Vest, where he's showing like all the different animal things that he's got. So I think that's probably putting you in the frame of mind of thinking of See My Vest more than Be Our Guest. And also, weirdly, the song isn't actually the same tune and the same melody as Be Our Guest or See My Vest the whole way through. There's just a significant segment dips into it, which is such a weird choice.
And it's also I'm glad
you guys also think it's weird.
That's how they treat the music as well. That it's like they don't have songs, they just start singing for a little bit.
Yeah.
It's weird.
And it's also because both characters who have songs are just basically speak singing.
Yeah.
And it and again, another movie that it reminds me of. It reminds me of Jermaine Clement in Moana. It's kind of that. It's
right,
a weird character moment of like, I'm going to be a character that's going to sing a song for some reason.
But yeah, it's like a character who realizes they're in a musical but didn't get the sheets.
All of this being said, I thought this was perfectly pleasant. I didn't love it, but I thought the animation was very nice. I'd love to see a feature length, version of these characters. And
my overall comment is not a Christmas movie. Like not a Christmas short film. Like this.
Well, it's a Christmas TV special.
If you remove the Christmas tree from inside the house. And the magpie just says, you know, like, doesn't have that whole monologue that was clearly, like, retconned in when Netflix was like, yeah, we'll buy it from you, but you'll have to make it about Christmas.
I think you're underestimating how long it takes to animate things and how early those assets would have been put in place. Like,
obviously
especially stop motion.
They have to get a buyer before they do all the work, right? So like they would have pitched this around and Netflix would have probably just been like, hey, yeah, we'll buy it from you as long as you make it a Christmas movie.
Netflix sometimes commission, but they sometimes just buy something that's already been made. I'm not sure what the deal is with.
Sure, but like all I'm saying is that this movie feels like it's the same sort of thing as a Pixar short film before the feature, although it's much longer, because it has that like one character who's out of place and then they learn something, and that's kind of the whole point of it.
There's the Olaf short they did, which was like 30 minutes.
Yeah, yeah. But so this movie is really about Robin and the mouse thing, and the fact that it happens at Christmas time really has no bearing on the rest of the film, and it barely,
I think you
for
can
me
say that about any Christmas film.
Not at all.
Yeah, I mean, like, why,
Miracle on
34th
Street could easily happen on any street.
I think we need to, as a culture and as a society, drop, like, what the fuck is a Christmas movie? What is this weird, like, categorization everyone's requiring for different movies to be Christmas movies? There either are Christmas movies or there aren't Christmas movies.
No. You can't, AJ's gone existential.
I just like the whole Die Hard thing, right? Which is so... Like,
we'll get
we're about
to, that,
to talk
AJ.
About we're
we'll
about to
get
talk
to
about
that.
It. But the question, yeah. Like, when people like, you know, they get red in their eye and the spittles foam, they're foaming at the mouth and they're like, Die Hard is a Christmas movie. It's like, what is a Christmas movie? What do you mean?
Takes place at Christmas.
What is this? It takes place at Christmas? Then Robin's a Christmas movie.
AJ, I love that you right now are the person who is like going off about people getting weirdly passionate about meaningless things to do with movies.
Jeremy, do you know what one of your greatest skills is? Is like you bring the conversation to a 10. Someone matches you and then you go to a 5 and go, okay.
Takes one to know one, Richard.
Jeremy makes the audacious claim that this Christmas movie isn't a Christmas movie. As a responding podcaster, I go, yes, and build it. And then he goes, you're fucking weird for caring about this shit.
All right, okay, why do you give a shit, weirdo?
Okay, nerd.
I like that you're picking up my vibe, AJ. It's good. It's good.
Again, it's good podcasting.
Having said all of that about Robin, I do think it is absolutely beautiful. Like the I haven't actually seen.
Was he had a heart under there?
Stop.
And on that day, his heart. No, but that I have never seen animation with that kind of fuzzy texture before. Yeah, like stop motion with that kind of fuzzy felt.
Yeah, like not clay.
Yeah, and just seeing like between each frame how like the fuzz. The fuzz slightly moving. Mm. It's kind of like Fantastic Mr. Fox in that way.
Yeah, which is Fox is I'm sorry, Aardman, but that might be like the most beautifully animated stop motion I've seen.
So
Kubo's fucking beautiful.
Yeah, but like in terms of like I'm still so used Aardman. To seeing stop motion in clay, but seeing it in this soft sort of texture was just really nice.
That was really nice.
Yeah.
If anything, they shouldn't have made it so beautiful because Aardman never really seemed like they were going for beautiful.
Mm.
Like they were going for like
they're staying cartoony, right? Yeah. Because they've got like, I mean, even in this, they've got like their mouths in every Aardman film look the same. Even when they did Flushed Away, which was 3D animated, it's still the same character designs.
Yeah. With that sort of ring mouth.
Yeah.
But not in this. Not anymore.
No, they do still have
fuck
a little
off,
bit of
Shaun
that,
the Sheep.
Design. But, okay, so one film left and 3, 2, 1.
Love Her.
Red Notice.
Home Alone.
Home Sweet Home Alone. If this was Disney Plusmas, we could have done Home Sweet Home Alone.
Yeah, and we did. What was the one? Noel last year, was it? Bill Hader? Was that
what it was called?
Alrighty, so Love Hard is a romantic comedy. It's this year's holiday.
fucking hell.
This film is about a journalist, like a she's like a dating column writer
for like a BuzzFeed.
Yeah, that job, kind of bullshit.
A job that still exists. It still exists.
So she documents her disastrous dating life on dating apps and whatnot, and then she ends up expanding her radius. Meets a guy who lives in Lake Placid, in New York, and falls in love and says, I'm going to write the best article ever about going to the other side of the country to meet this perfect guy I'll fall in love with. She gets there and discovers that he's not perfect. He's actually Asian, which is treated as if like, ugh!
here is the really interesting grappling that this movie has to do with itself is I think they want to go, she turns up and he's a nerd. He's not who she yeah. expects him to be, right? But then another part of the casting department is like, well, we should make him Chinese so that we've got a more diverse cast.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, filmmakers, the implication here is that it's because he's Chinese. And they try to nip it in the bud very fast. He's like, you've never dated a Chinese guy before? And she's like, no, I have, but I knew.
Yeah. No, yeah, you know, yeah, what he looked like. It's funny. Yeah, like having to be like, you're not who you said you were. I don't have a problem with who you are, but you deceived me. But so anyway, she gets there, but then turns out this guy, whose name is Josh, played by Jimmy O Yang, is actually knows the guy in the photos. They weren't just stock photos he used. It's actually his old best friend from high school, and says, all right, if you pretend, because as when she shows up to his house unannounced, his parents are like, holy shit, like we never thought we'd see a girl show up to our son's house, you know, as a day, and says, well, okay, pretend to be my girlfriend until Christmas and I will get you tagged. I will tell you how to get him, essentially. So she now begins to create what Josh tells her is the perfect girl for Tag. You know, he's into like rock climbing and hikes and all stuff. So she's essentially now pretending to be someone she isn't to attract this guy. And then obviously because it's a rom-com, she does end up falling in love with Josh. And Tag finds out about this whole charade and he gets all pissed off. But yeah, they end up fighting and then.
And also, they end up being kind of pressured into getting engaged during this time.
Yes,
by engaged. because Josh's older brother, who's played by Harry Shum Jr. in a great role for him, is like the perfect older brother for his family, and it's just constantly outshining his younger brother, and Josh is totally over it.
Yeah, so I thought, okay, I'm going to use the word inoffensive here. I thought it was a relatively inoffensive movie. Sure, it has somewhat offensive things in it, but in terms of, you know, catfishing a girl, still getting the girl, all this kind of thing. But it's a fairly watchable, enjoyable romantic comedy. I'm not necessarily going to say that I laughed out loud at any points, but I did. I liked the characters. I thought they had good chemistry. I thought Nina Dobrev and Jimmy O Yang were both perfectly likable. Good chemistry. And, you know, I ended up finding myself rooting for them.
I thought they had bad chemistry, but please go on.
Well, I have is that they had good chemistry, so.
I could maybe believe that they became friends. I didn't sense. Right. My romantic radar wasn't going off between them at all. And that was one of the big critiques I had of it. And when you said somewhere I saw you say that it had good chemistry, I was like, that's very interesting because I disagree. But because you're my friend, I didn't tell you that I disagreed with you because that's what friends do.
I wish you'd been honest with me.
Well, speaking of that, I think the stupidest, I don't like this movie, and I think the stupidest part of this movie is when basically the lie comes unraveled, as it does in these kinds of movies, and lo and behold, it's in front of a whole crowd of people who have come to believe one thing and it's not true, and like it takes a page out of like 90s sitcom trope book where the guy she's pretending to date and the guy she's secretly wanting to date are at the same party, and she has to pretend to be each
hilarious
of their dates.
Ripe for mishaps.
Ripe for mishaps. And then there's a new part where name. Where after she has to explain everything to this whole crowd of people, and Tag, the guy she actually likes, says like, right, so when you told me that you liked rock climbing, or when you liked this, or when you liked that, you were just lying to me. And then he essentially makes the point that you pretending to like the same things as this person you have a crush on is just as bad as catfishing someone over Tinder. Which is like, not only is that not true, but every fucking person in the world pretends to like things that the person they have a crush on likes. That's part of the fun game of romance, right? Like, she's basically just trying to impress him. It's very innocent and not at all the same thing as catfishing someone so that they move across the country.
That's
to see
the
you.
End of the Tag storyline as well.
Is it really?
Pretty much. So it's funny. Like he's so unequivocally done with her after that point. But also, I think they do plant the seeds that like Tag is like not the best dude. And
really, I thought they went out of their way to make him not a straw man and not. Like, he's a perfectly nice guy. They have
He's so clearly not the guy that she wants to be with, because basically they make it that he's really into Thoreau, the writer, and she hates Thoreau. Like, she pretends to like that writer. And because it's like liking Thoreau is kind of not just about liking the writing, it also implies that he's the kind of guy who would like Thoreau. And she's like, ugh, those guys. But she kind of like, she swallows that bile because he's hot. And so the whole thing from like the very beginning of when Josh is teaching her how to be kind of the kind of girl that guy likes, you become very aware of the fact that like, oh, this is based on very shaky foundations, because he is not that kind of guy.
Well, and
that's
the thing, like what I was saying about him not being like super like it is very much like, if you're not into rock climbing, you can get fucked. Like, he's not explicitly like a dickhead, but it is like he's shallow essentially. And
right.
We get that.
I guess the only thing I can say there is that the amount of
he's so hot, I forgive it.
The amount of concentration that my brain was putting into watching this movie is the same as its Rotten Tomato score, which is 50%. And thought because he also had a literary preference, that was the same as her.
It's like they're both into books. Who gives a shit?
No, legit. Because I was expecting it to be like, he's just a total meathead who's completely wrong for her. But he proved that he had some kind of like intellectual understanding of literature. And I was like, oh, interesting. They're going to do it so that he's not the opposite of her. But they have. They just made them both intellectuals, which I guess I wasn't expecting.
Yeah.
I also saw this movie a month ago and barely remember.
Yeah, this weirdly was like the most I've paid attention to a movie in quite a long time. I don't think I touched my phone once during this film. I was just so enamored with the characters and their chemistry, of which they had plenty. But one thing that we did say we would talk about, we'd come back around to, is that this film has the weird for 2021 big through line of like, did you know Die Hard is a Christmas movie? No, it's not. Well, if you think about it, it takes place at Christmas and blah, 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 blah. And so this is the whole thing of like, this is how they have their first great chat on the dating app, because Natalie, the main character, is... you know, adamant that Die Hard is a Christmas movie, whereas Josh prefers Love Actually. Now, for eagle-eyed viewers at home, you will notice that the title of the film is actually made up of those two titles, the love taken from Love Actually and the hard taken from Die Hard. You're left with the title Love Hard, which...
which leaves Die Actually.
Yeah, but the sequel, presumably, when Josh passes away. But but the film does end with the moment from Love Actually with the cards, like, say it's carolers. And it's Josh apologizing to her, right? Yeah, because she... they've sort of gone their separate ways, and... then she sees that Josh has a profile on his dating app, which is actually him, and she's like, oh, this is nice that he's, you know. And then he shows up at her house, does the thing.
No, she shows up at his house.
Sorry, yeah, she shows up at his house and does the cards thing. And says something like, you know, do you want to be with me, whatever. And then he writes on his card, yippee-ki-yay, motherfucker, which got me. I thought that was such a nice moment. I thought it was a great moment.
It was clever.
It was a fun moment, and it was a nice little payoff to the Love Actually Die Hard thing that just weirdly was throughout the movie. And also, it was the film's only F-bomb, and I don't know that I've ever seen a film's single F-bomb be written down. And that kind of got to me. I was like... It really got to me, but I'm like that kind of like it surprised me, and you know, I had an actual reaction to it. Compared that to last year, and like I honestly think like this is actually so comparable to Holiday from last year, which was the Emma Roberts film, which was essentially just like a romantic comedy that
tried to break all the conventions. Well,
and it's like, it's a fairly middle of the road rom-com. It's like, it's not that bad. And if Netflix just put out one Christmas rom-com a year, and if it was of that quality, there would be like, it wouldn't be that noteworthy. I would maybe watch them. But Holiday did this weird thing where it was weirdly explicit. Like in the first 5 minutes, there was like talk of cum swallowing. Whereas this film stayed relatively wholesome throughout the whole thing, and I thought that was nice. And then to have the yippee-ki-yay motherfucker at the end, I was like, oh, that's cool.
Yeah, I think this is an example of what happens when the like meme to mainstream film pipeline, like you see it with like how the Sonic the Hedgehog movie had like references to Sonic memes in it, and this is what happens when the Die Hard is actually a Christmas movie discourse has dried up in actual real life conversations, but it made it into a script someone wrote 3 years ago that took another while to actually get filmed and made.
But also the Love Actually is actually a terrible Christmas movie, and it's like really sexist and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah,
like,
yeah. And the hottest talking points of 2017 finally made it into a 2021 movie.
Yeah, like those things have been hashed out so many times already, and it's just like, okay, this movie thinks it's going to be the final word. I don't think so.
Yeah.
I think this movie has a really interesting example of, and I've got to do a lot of backtracking as I try to explain this. I think it is an example of the female gaze in it. Would you guys like to hear my theory?
Please, go.
Okay, so first of all, let me just say that I am a feminist, and I think what a lot of people say is the female gaze is actually still the male gaze. Like,
I totally thought you were going to be like, as a man, I'm not like the authority on this, but instead you're like, I am a feminist, so I am the authority on this.
No, I didn't mean that. I was more saying like, if this is your first cop popular episode and you're just hearing a guy talk like this, I'm doing this very wryly because I know that this is shaky ground to make jokes about, right? But like something like Chris Hemsworth looking hot in a Thor movie is still the male gaze, right?
Because it's a power fantasy. How men,
yeah, exactly. But this has a really interesting thing in it, and I can say this as a man who has used dating apps for a very long time. And that is, she is like, why did you catfish me? And he's like, oh, it's because girls don't talk to you if you look like me. And she's like, well, let me look at your profile. What photos did you use before you used the fake photos? And she looks, and it's like these real creepy pictures of him like holding an axe and shit like that. And she goes like, oh, that's, you know, you've got to, she basically says like, if you really put yourself out there and if you really put who you truly are on a dating app, you're going to attract more matches. Not true. Like, definitively, I can tell you, not
just
true.
A female as a fantasy.
Yeah, that's what I mean. I think at the very least, I don't consider myself an ugly person, right? I'm probably about as comparably hot in Hollywood terms as they pretend Jimmy O Yang isn't. I'm saying he's more attractive than me, but if I was in a movie, we'd be the same.
Yeah,
I guess.
I think the thing with that though is, yeah, it's about like putting yourself out there, but it is, well, what she's saying is more like, you shouldn't be trying to look strong because you think that that's what women want. It's your smile is actually one of your best qualities, so you should put that in a photo.
I've had countless women edit my Tinder profiles. It never helped. So all I'm saying is I think it's a really funny example of maybe I'm being a bit cheeky by calling it the female gaze. Maybe it's more
an optimistic. You're being derogatory about the female gaze the same way women are about the male gaze.
I'm saying that, like, that it feels like it's written by someone who's very optimistic and maybe.
Well, it's probably written by someone who's hot.
Exactly. Maybe that's it. Maybe it's not a female gaze. Maybe it's pretty privilege, right?
Yeah.
Like, it's an example of someone truly who hasn't been to the depths of being on a dating app for year after year and not really, like, matching with anyone. And so I just thought that was a funny, like, a kind of humorously ignorant thing
yeah,
to
it's
try
just like,
and
it's like,
claim.
Oh, this will be really helpful advice for you. Mm. And it's just like,
yeah.
No, it's actually not.
Mm. My main photo on my Tinder profile is a great picture of me with, like, flowers in my beard. It's very fun. And, like, that, you know, bore little fruit. So my point is more that...
Or did you try being yourself? Because you don't have flowers in your beard right now.
That's true.
I've literally never seen you with flowers in your beard.
That would be my opening line when they'd say, like, I like your flower beard. I'd be like, thanks, the beard's still there, but the flowers are gone.
Yeah, I think that says a lot about... I think that's a beautiful metaphor.
I think you should just stick to making your candles, AJ.
Yeah, I thought that's where you were going with it, that it's like the female, like they give him the candle making hobby.
Oh yeah, he makes candles in this.
Yeah. And he makes
Did anybody
one...
else think that like the concept for his candles, which is like masculine
they're fucking everywhere.
scented candles. Are they everywhere?
Yes, they're
I was
everywhere.
Gonna say right, okay. Because I was watching, I was like, this is a better idea than the movie. Like this,
yeah, no,
this,
yeah, yeah. Because this whole thing is like, yeah, there's no candles that are like masculine scents. Again, great idea in 2016. Now they're everywhere. Go to any candle shop.
Like, also, like, okay. Yeah. They were okay. Everywhere in 2017. Yeah,
2016
they
was
were even
the height
in
of
Barker's,
them,
yeah. And they're no longer selling them in Barker's because obviously men do not buy candles.
I think, like, to be fair though, some of those candles smell fucking incredible. And like, yeah, there's a lot of like, because they tend to be like really kind of smoky, like when
leather,
I say smoky,
tobacco.
Like you're talking about, yeah, whiskey, tobacco, and like just smells of like different woods. Some of them smell fucking incredible.
But did you buy any of them?
Yes.
Oh, well, did you buy more than one?
Yes.
Oh, wow.
Make his point work, Richard. Don't be mean.
Ask me if I bought three.
Did you buy three?
No, I did buy two though. yes, a similar kind of sense that you'd find like stuff like beard oils, but a lot of this like marketed to men like thing. It's kind of over the peak now, but yeah, you know, like you get like masculine yogurts.
It's
and stuff
it's
like
less
that.
About the masculine side of it and more like I would like a scented candle that smells like, you know, nostalgic. Things.
Yeah, but yeah, the moment that because he has this tenuous sort of relationship with his father, and he makes a candle that smells like his granddad, his father's father, and it's this nice moment that because especially as well because you know it is actually true that your like olfactory sense is most closely linked to memory, so it's this you know it was a nice little subplot and it was a nice little marriage of you know plot elements coming together to resolve in a.
I think my general sense about this movie is it was better than it had any right to be.
Like yeah, I was expecting it to be
a holiday.
Unwatchable. Yeah.
I thought it was going to be another holiday where it was like, oh, you really tried and you failed. But actually, it was more akin to...
Let It Snow?
Yeah, Let It Snow. Yeah, and actually same production company.
Wow, I disagree, guys. I thought Holiday was better and I didn't think this was a good movie. So
that's interesting that you thought Holiday was better.
I think the memory I have of Holiday.
Yeah, but also we thought the Princess Switch movies were fun.
Well, I'd like not to repeat a point I made last year. I don't think any of these movies are good. I would like to put my foot down and say that's also part of it. As we get into these headspaces of defending our opinions, but it's like the difference.
Well, yeah, if we were talking about these films on an episode of Film Franchise Fortnights, I would probably not be so. Complimentary, but it is that the bar is so low. And I think not even just for Netflix movies, I think the bar is lower for Christmas movies. And I think at this time of year, you're willing to forgive, you know, the quality of a movie a little bit if it's just a nice movie. And it's like, yeah, there's like the pretense that their relationship is set on isn't very good. And like the you get into iffy territory with like catfishing people and stuff like that. But it is just a movie that by the end of it, you feel nice that two people have found love. And I think around the holidays, you are actually willing to forgive those things a little bit more and you are willing to buy into a movie and just let it make you feel good. You two both look incredibly disinterested in what I thought was quite a beautiful, heartfelt point I was making.
It is, and a great place to end our discussion on Love Hard. And if anyone's wondering, the single other example I've ever noticed in the real world of the female gaze is that my flatmate put our entire supply of toilet paper directly next to the bowl.
And no.
I was like, this is because girls don't, they're not thinking that we're going to be standing there peeing into the bowl and something might go wrong and you destroy the whole supply of toilet paper. The female gaze. Thank you very much.
Oh, one last thing about Love Hard. How weird was it, the number of random movie quotes that they just dropped into the script with no, like, there was no recognition from any of the characters that they were saying lines from other movies that were more successful and more famous. They just used them as lines in the script, not being like, hey, I'm quoting a movie right now.
I would actually argue that every line in this movie is from a movie.
Jeremy, what you just said is a good wrap-up, actually, because that's true of basically the entire Netflix run so far, is that like we've got, like we talked about, the
Princess
Terminator
Switch,
and Batman references in Princess Switch, the random See My Vest parody in Robin,
and the Beatles references.
I'm sure there was one in Father Christmas's Back.
The Beatles references.
There you go. Like there is a context being lost to being able to justify putting references in your movie, and people think it's just enough to say things.
Well, that's the 2021 Netflixmas part one of two is weird references to things. Let's see what part two brings us when we cover, awesome. I don't know, A Boy Called Christmas and a few other films.
That's it. Thank you for joining us for Netflix's Part 1 2021. We'll be back next week. Follow us on Twitter and Instagram share the podcast wherever you can. You can join us on our Discord, which there'll be a link to in the show notes. Come and tell, please, can someone tell me off for even pitching the idea of the female gaze? Because I feel dirty about that. And if also people want to, they can support us on Patreon, slingshotting to the other side of, like, you can either condemn me or you can financially support
or you can fund me
over on patreon.com/cultpopshire, where you'll be hearing more about that soon in the form of a post-credit sequence after this movie stops. But see you guys next week. This
movie stops, though.
I mean, in next fortnight. All right, welcome along, everybody, to the post-credit scene. This is a segment at the end of each episode where if you give us $5 or more, if you donate $5 or more over at patreon.com/cultpopshire, you get to give us something to talk about. And this, the post-credit scene, Jeremy's still here. A rare appearance from a member who's not getting paid for this. He's not getting paid for this, so Jeremy, you don't have to say anything.
Well, I was going to be silent and just listen to how you did it, but hey, I'm happy to be part of it.
All right, well, what's the question? This is a good question for you, Jeremy, actually.
And who's it for?
This comes to us from Joshua Cole, who says, would you rather fuck a dog and no one knows, or not fuck a dog and everyone thinks you did? This is one of those classic, like, you know, thought experiment questions. I think, like, if you choose not fuck a dog and everyone thinks you did, you haven't thought about the question properly. Like, imagine the entire world, everyone, literally every person who has ever lived, people who are going to be born from now are going to grow up knowing, okay, Jeremy fucked a dog. And you cannot change their mind. Nothing you can do, no matter how much you tell them. Also, this means that you might be arrested for bestiality and you would go to prison. And people there would be like, that's the dog fucker. It's so, like, why,
Richard,
would you not choose to?
I disagree. And here's why. Because it's more important to me what I know in my heart to be true.
Integrity.
Yeah, I believe in doing the right thing, and I believe that fucking a dog is not the right thing to do. I would throw my life away at the chance to not fuck a dog.
Right, but so that's the thing, is that, like, the ostensibly...
See you next week, everybody!
As far as everyone who has ever lived, apart from you, thinks, yeah, fuck that dog.
That's fine, as long as I didn't actually do it.
Like, I would stop doing a podcast with you. Like, yep. Like your life would absolutely fall apart. And yep. And probably, you would be in your loneliest moment, you wouldn't even have a pet to keep you company because no one would let you buy one. You would like all alone, no one around you, and you would be agreed. You'd be thinking to yourself, why didn't I fuck that dog?
No, I'd be thinking to myself, I'm so happy that I didn't fuck that dog.
But also, like, the corollary to that is that you'd be walking around for the rest of your life in every situation, and people are like, oh man, Richard, I love you so much. Like, I'm so glad that you're my friend. And you're like, yeah, but you don't know I fucked a dog.
You're like the guy at the party, they don't know I fucked a dog.
If you really knew who I was, if you really knew the kind of person.
Funnily enough, now that you've worded it and you've given me reason to actually think about it, Jeremy, now I switch sides. I could live with it.
That's the thing. I could absolutely live with that. So, Jeremy, so you wouldn't?
I genuinely...
Like cards on the table, I am so concerned with what other people think of me. And the demons I live with anyway. I thought this is fucking a piece of cake.
Oh man, this is just making me think this is the stage of life I'm at right now. But like basically every day I watch about 4 episodes of a TV show called Bluey, where all the characters are dogs, and I'm just like, what if I was just a dog on Bluey and my fucking a dog was just the normal thing because the dog is my wife?
Yeah, yeah. Like, that's the loophole. I would be a dog and I would fuck the dog.
Guys, no. There's that whole kink. There's that whole kink of dressing up as a dog.
I don't think that counts. I think you.
I don't think
be.
That counts. No, but yeah, the loophole is. So it's like you are a dog. Do you want all the other dogs to think you're the fucking man? But you didn't actually.
Or a total virgin dog.
You know that classic joke that's like, I banged a 16-year-old. Oh, I was 16 at the time. It's like, yeah, I banged a dog. Oh my God. Oh, I was a dog at the time.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.